green light is on there. So, all right. So, Appellants Counsel, when you're ready, you'll have 15 minutes for your opening argument. You may proceed when you're ready.
Awesome. Thank you. My name is Hannah Laub. I represent the appellant, Mr. Roland Ybarra, and we ask this court to reverse the district court's order denying the motion to suppress for a lack of reasonable articulable suspicion to justify expanding the search. Alternatively, we ask this court to reverse for a lack of probable cause for Mr. Ybarra's arrest. So in my brief, there's a couple of different expansions of the stop, and we argue that both of them were unconstitutional. I would like to start, though, with the first expansion of the stop, which is roughly 1 minute and 59 seconds into the body cam footage when the deputy asked Mr. Ybarra if he had a medical marijuana license or prescription. So Torgerson says the odor of marijuana does not provide reasonable articulable suspicion for probable cause to search as a single factor. We argue that the odor of marijuana also does not provide reasonable articulable suspicion to justify expanding a search.
How do you argue that when it's illegal to smoke marijuana in a car on the road or highway?
So
wouldn't the very least you be able to ask, so, were you smoking marijuana?
I would think yes, if there was something more, but there was no driving that was, no impaired driving, and no other indicas to indicate that he was impaired.
But I'm not talking about driving under the influence of marijuana. I'm just talking about it's a crime mm-hmm. to smoke marijuana in a car on the road. It's a misdemeanor. So is it, if he can say so, are you smoking marijuana? Is it the next questions that he asks that are not allowed, or what is it?
Well, I would say, so Burbach says that just the odor alone doesn't, of alcohol, right, does not give reasonable articulable suspicion to do a search or to expand the stop for an open container violation.
Right. And Burbach, I mean, the law is different now. I mean, in terms of both marijuana. But anyway, go ahead.
Right. Well, so a couple of things also on how marijuana is different. The smell of marijuana is also easily transferable. It is legal to smoke marijuana in a car as long as you are not on a public street or highway. And again, the smell kind of lingers. And so in addition, he wasn't really asking questions. If you do find that the just asking about it is constitutional, what's not constitutional is the type of questions that he was actually asking. He was asking... he was asking basically, did you get it legally? Which when there's a legal item in somebody's car, you know, you can't just start asking, well, did you steal that? Did you get that legally? And so expanding the stop to ask questions, you know, where did you get it? Who was, oh, your friends were smoking it. Where did they get it? How do you know that they got it legally? And so I think those questions that are expanding into whether or not the, whether or not somebody got the marijuana legally, that's also an unconstitutional expansion. And it, just a single question, and in this case, it was more than a single question, could be an expansion of a stop for those types of questions. And in addition, even if, you know, that first stop where he was questioning about the odor of marijuana wasn't unconstitutional, if that was what you were going to find, the second expansion happened about 4 minutes into the body cam footage when the deputy called a canine unit. So the deputy requests the canine unit for a few different reasons.
That's after he sees the torch and notices, in his opinion, the appearance of the passenger. Would that be a fair statement?
He does notice those two things. I think especially the passenger should not be a factor. Mere association is not enough. And additionally, I believe the state cited State versus Garding for the statement that prolonged drug use can be a factor in the analysis. It's not prolonged drug use. The Supreme Court actually decided that case based on signs of recent drug use. The passenger in that case had kind of scabbing around the mouth and on the arms and bruises and looked like somebody who had recently used drugs. We have a case here where there's an alleged, a dental hygiene issue and sunken in eyes. So potentially prolonged drug use without kind of something more recent that would say this person might be using an illegal substance is certainly not enough. And just the fact that it was a passenger in mere association is not enough. That suspicion to Mr. Ybarra must be particularized to Mr. Ybarra in order to expand the stop.
Now, even with the dog sniff, you still need just reasonable suspicion, am I right?
You need reasonable articulable suspicion for a dog sniff.
Well, and I certainly agree with you, the idea that you're driving under the speed limit is ridiculous. I mean, that's how I drive my entire life and drives everyone crazy. But what about, and you can talk about it, we can all describe it differently, but, and I'll just use the word evasive. I mean, when the policeman first sees the car kind of pulls over and then it doesn't keep driving again until, after the police car goes away. Doesn't that play any role in reasonable suspicion?
I don't really see how that action is indicative of drug possession. You were correct. They were kind of like driving towards each other on a road, and then Mr. Ybarra pulled over, and that's what caught the deputy's attention.
Am I correct? And after the police car went away, that's when he started driving again. Is that?
Yeah, I think he testified about half a mile to a.
So why isn't that relevant?
Well, I don't see how that is evasive behavior, first of all. I mean, the best way to evade the police in that situation would just be to keep driving. You're going in opposite directions. So I don't know how pulling over and drawing kind of more attention to yourself and also staying in that one location where the police officer saw you is being evasive. If anything, you're making yourself more noticeable and you're staying closer to where the officer is. So I would argue it's not really evasive. If he had been speeding away, that would be a different thing. If he had made an abrupt turn when he saw an officer, I think that could be evasive. But just pulling over, I don't see how that's evasive. And as far as the butane torch, I will say the state did not preserve evidence on the body cam footage, obviously, and the officer did state it would probably be on the body cam footage, and then it was not on the body cam footage. And this court has found clear error when the testimony of a police officer contradicted what happened in the body cam footage. But I'd also just like to highlight that the state in this case preserved all the evidence of the search, except for the butane torch, in photographs as well. So the photographs, when they took the photos of the search, included the drugs that they found, but also included things like a couple of pipes and a bong. And so that butane torch also not being in those photographs, I think just shows that it was not in the record, and that would be clear error to find that it's in the record. I'd also like to highlight that Mr. Ybarra's criminal history, the PSI that was in the record, it said that his most recent conviction that would have been on that history was from 2014, most recent felony conviction. I'm basing that off of the PSI that was filed in the district court case. So my apologies if something looks different, but as I saw in the record, which includes the PSI report, the most recent drug conviction was in 2014. The time of the stop, that's almost like a decade later. And he testified that he didn't see any of his recent drug cases when he was looking, and that would be his, the case that he was on probation for, which was more recent, but he didn't see that one at the time he expanded the stop. He also didn't know that Mr. Ybarra was on probation at the time of the stop, which the state did concede. But I'd also just like to highlight that the odor of marijuana doesn't provide reasonable articulable suspicion for other types of drug crimes. So in Dawson, there was an odor from a vehicle that was coming very strong, and they had a tip that there was a large amount of cocaine in that vehicle. And the court noted that the odor of marijuana wasn't reasonable articulable suspicion of criminal activity for marijuana because there's no connection between cocaine and marijuana. So I think that's apt here. I mean, you have a case where the officer is stopping someone based on a tint violation, and they're asking all sorts of questions about marijuana, and they seem to be kind of fishing for well, where did you get it? How do you know that your friends got it legally? And then seeing a butane torch. And so the odor of marijuana, and the officer testified that the butane torch is used for methamphetamine use, not for marijuana use. So again, I think there's that lack of, you do look at things in conjunction, obviously, but there has to be some sort of factor tying them together that would make them stronger together instead of just apart. I'd also like to talk about our second argument on the residual amount, unless there's questions about the search that anyone has. Okay. The amount of methamphetamine found in the screw top container was a residual amount of a controlled substance that was contained in drug paraphernalia, which is no longer a crime under MnStat 152.025. I will say that there was an argument by the respondent that the screw top container was not a paraphernalia because it was primarily used to transport. And I will just say, Mr. Ybarra did use this to ingest the methamphetamine. He also, this court has also found in contemplation of this statute that a plastic baggie is paraphernalia. And they found, I did supplemental authority for that. It's State v. Johnston, where it's not, they didn't exactly hold, right, that the plastic baggie was paraphernalia, but they said that somebody who had that plastic baggie with white residue, they should have gotten a downward durational departure because that white residue in the plastic baggie was no longer gonna be unlawful when the new statute came into effect, because his sentencing was 5 days before the new statute came into effect. So they looked at him and they said, okay, you have residue in a white baggie, or sorry, you have white residue in a baggie. This is not going to be a crime in 5 days before your sentencing. So you should have been able to get a downward dispositional departure. I'd also like to say that.
The issue we're talking about is probable cause for the search.
Mm-hmm.
How does this, this seems to be more an argument that, like, well, maybe he can't be convicted of it after trial, but here we're just talking about search. So why is this argument relevant to that?
Because before 2023, the amount that he had would have been a felony. It would have been an arrestable defense. It no longer was an arrestable offense. And so the officers at that point had to understand, if you're looking at a piece of paraphernalia with 0.13 grams, which, by the way, a Domino sugar packet is 3.5 grams. And so 0.13 grams in a container with a straw, right? The officers do have to be enforcing the law as it stands on the day that they're making an arrest. And on that day, it simply wasn't arrestable. I'd also like to say the statute is not ambiguous. The state or the court should look at Black's Law Dictionary in order to define what a residual means in the context of the statute, which is of, relating to, or constituting a residue, remaining, or left over. So this is meant to decriminalize possession of a very, very, very small amount of drugs within paraphernalia. The state did list some kind of worst case scenarios about this statute, like someone could use a little bit of it and leave even a felony amount, which I would say the whole definition of what residual means would prevent that from happening. The whole definition shows it has to be relating to a residue, remaining, a leftover amount, and it has to be in paraphernalia. And the definition of paraphernalia inherently is going to limit the amount of controlled substance that could be legal in that situation. Unless there are more questions.
Would an officer just looking at that know that it's paraphernalia versus a container that's being used to transport?
I believe an officer that I should have known it was paraphernalia. Yes.
Okay.
No more questions. I will go ahead and sit down.
All right. Thank you, counsel. Counsel for respondent will the clock adjusted again. Thank you so much for doing that. Hello, Martin. When you're ready, you may proceed.
Good morning, and may it please the court. I'm Taylor McGowan, Martin County Attorney, on behalf of Respondent State of Minnesota. And I, as outlined in my responsive brief, am arguing that there was reasonable suspicion for the search of Mr. Ibarra, and that there was probable cause for his arrest. First, with respect to the search, I think, as I noted in my brief, there were multiple factors that came into play to provide reasonable suspicion. There was his driving conduct, which was evasive. It wasn't just the going below the speed limit. It was stopping along the side of the road, which isn't something someone normally does. It is also included.
So just so I'm clear, both cars were going towards each other.
Yes.
Then Mr. Barr's car, arguably when he saw the police car, pulled over.
Yes.
I take it the police officer's car, you know, the lights weren't going on and the just driving like you drive.
Yes. No, yeah. So there was that conduct. And, you know, also I think even before this time, you know, Deputy TG had, you know, noticed the tint, had looked into Mr. Ibarra's, you know, whether looked at his driving record, I think had some contact with Jackson County. So he was aware that Mr. Ibarra had an extensive history with narcotics. And so due to
that 10 years ago,
it was
last drug conviction was, as counsel for appellant argued, was 14. Would that be a correct statement?
I would have to double check that. I know.
Now, the other, was he or was he not on probation at the time of the stop?
I believe he was.
For what?
I believe that was, I want to say his last drugs offense was like a first degree. So he was either on, I think he might have been on parole at the time. But I, you know, as the state conceded, Deputy TG was not aware of that until after the stop had happened. So nonetheless, you know, he was privy that Mr. Ibarra did have an extensive history with narcotics, you know, which goes, you know, it wasn't just one offense. Even in 2014, there was a history of it. He was known to Jackson County authorities for having a history of narcotics use. So, you know, WTG already had that information upon conducting a traffic stop for a tint violation, which there's, I think, no question about the legality of that. And then obviously upon making contact with Mr. Ibarra, WTG observes Mr. Ibarra's passenger who shows indicia of extensive methamphetamine use as well as a torch.
So why does that provide reasonable suspicion to order a drug sniff dog?
You're talking about the appearance of a passenger? In and of itself, you know, it would not. But I think coupled with, you know, State v. Garding indicated signs of methamphetamine use are a factor to consider because it shows association with other drug users. So that's an observation that Deputy TG made. And then I think the most important one is he testified at both the omnibus hearing and trial is to seeing a torch in the center console area. Now,
he smells marijuana and then starts asking questions. And as I recall, the appellant specifically said, you know, I've not been smoking marijuana. Okay, so from there, which I think is, I think you get to ask that question.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why does he get to ask the questions, about medical marijuana and all that stuff? Why do you get to ask those questions?
I would have to go back and review the video as to the specific, you know, inquiry and when.
Is it because he doesn't believe him?
I think there's likely something to that.
When he asked the first question, have you been smoking marijuana? Is that when he saw the torch?
I'm not sure exactly when the timing is. Obviously, the question is being asked right when Deputy TG is at the driver's side window. At that point, I mean, from his vantage point, he has a view of the whole center console area. So it is very likely that he saw the torch at that time. But
this torch is like what you would use to light up, like a grill.
Not quite. From viewing other body cam video that was disclosed in pretrial, it's sort of a, oh, it's hard to describe. It's a handheld torch that you would hold upright and like press down on a button, and the torch would kind of come out at a 90 degree angle.
So it's not a lighter.
No, no.
And like used for creme brulee or something like that?
Yes, yes. You would maybe see it used in that circumstance.
And it's not a crime to make creme brulee.
No, it is not. But perhaps an odd device to have, you know, just sitting in your center console of your vehicle. But again, you know, we're not looking at any of these factors in isolation. We're looking at them.
What about the argument that, well, you know, you can't see the torch on the video, therefore, and I'm well aware of the arguments about, you know, what's the district court? I mean, we're all aware of that. The district court judges make credibility findings for that. But what about the argument that counsel for the appellant made that, well, if it's not on the video, then it was clear error to say there was a torch because you can't see it. Now, why doesn't the video disclose the presence of the torch in the console?
Well, again, I think maybe it's some difference in understanding of what is meant by the center console area. So I think generally, if you were to look at a automotive, you know, magazine or something, they would define the center console area as going all the way from the dash to the armrest. Counsel's arguments seem to be interpreting center console as meaning the entire dash area. And I think when you look at the photo that they provided or the body cam video, the console area going down to the armrest area is not visible in the body cam. However, it would have been entirely visible to Deputy TG. Yes.
Okay. Was this torch recovered, you know, at some point there was, they did an inventory of what was found. Was the torch on the inventory?
It was not. But as I noted, and again, I admit it's not part of the record, there was other body.
I don't want to hear about
it. Okay.
So to sum up, and you tell me if you want to add anything, and we can all debate about whether the conduct was invasive or not, but you know, some driving conduct, the smell of marijuana, the torch, and the appearance of the passenger. Was there anything else that you would argue provided reasonable suspicion for the dog sniff?
And I think too, knowledge of Mr. Ibarra's history with narcotics, that he had been involved with.
What case says that a driver's prior felony, well, prior criminal convictions are relevant to establish reasonable suspicion for a dog sniff search? You tell me.
I would say State v. Lugo. That's what I cited in my brief.
Thank you.
So, and again, you know, none of these are in isolation. They're all coupled together. And I think, you know, that provided a reasonable basis, which low threshold, to do the search.
When did he learn about the convictions? Was that before or after he called in the dog sniff?
The specifics of, you know, what was relayed by the Jackson County officer was not provided in detail, but
well, I mean, did the Jackson County officer even say, you know, well, he's got, you know, three convictions, you know, for this and that? I mean, I thought it was more like of the, well, you know, he's kind of known to us for.
I think the Jackson County officer had mentioned that he had been incarcerated for those as well. And Deputy TG, and again, if I remember the timing correct, had also pulled up Mr. Ibarra's information on MGA. And again, what specifically he had viewed, you know, in the case file listing as far as, you know, convictions, things like that, it's unclear from the record. But certainly he had seen, you know, some involvement with law enforcement regarding narcotics issues.
So that before calling in the dog sniff.
Yes. So obviously the next issue that that the appellant raised that I addressed is this issue of, you know, whether there was probable cause for a felony arrest. The state maintains that there was, due to the discovery of what Officer TG and then the district court referred to as a weighable amount of methamphetamine in the screw top container that was located in the vehicle. I think, again, you know, looking at the fifth degree control of possession statute, which says that a quarter of a gram of a Schedule 1 through 4 substance is a felony amount. And I think understanding the probable cause standard that, you know, based on what Deputy TG saw when he unscrewed that cap on that container, that, you know, he had probable cause to believe that there was a felony amount of narcotics. So obviously, if we, you know, get into this question about, well, you know, should he have understood it to be a residual amount, I think that opens up a whole other host of issues, which of course I addressed. First off being that I'm not sure if a screw top container of this type actually is paraphernalia under Minnesota statute. I think attorneys and even the courts have been perhaps somewhat loose with that definition throughout the years. And if you look at what drug paraphernalia is under the statute, it is something primarily used for the ingestion or consumption of narcotics. I don't believe a screw top container is paraphernalia as understood under Minnesota statute, because it's not. That's not what it's primarily used for. It's used to carry items, transport items. It's not used to ingest items out of. And I think this is further kind of confirmed by the nature of this container, which is shows up in Trial Exhibit 3A. It's a container with a, you know, relatively wide base and a couple inches deep. It's not something that's really conducive to inhaling a substance out of. And just in my final 2 minutes, just in case the court wants to engage it, you know, the idea of, or the question of, what is a residual amount under Minnesota law? The legislature obviously amended the fifth degree controlled substance statute 2 years ago to provide an exception for residue amounts and paraphernalia. However, it did not define what residual amount is, which is really complicated because they did not impose a floor on amounts of Schedule 1 through 4 narcotics that you can have that trigger criminal liability. So that obviously creates some, I think, confusion. Nonetheless, I think when looking at the facts of this case, as well as, you know, divining what the legislature intended in the statute, that this amount, which was more than half of a felony amount of methamphetamine, and that's after Deputy TG removed some in order to do testing, is certainly more than, I think, what the legislature intended to exempt from criminal liability. I mean, this was an amount of methamphetamine that could amount to a further dose. And I think in light of that, you know, it's a possession of that amount that further, you know, that could be of further use in a dosage, at a dosage level, that they still maintain should be criminalized, both in possession and sale. If no further questions, I'll wrap up.
I don't see any.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel for appellant, you will have 5 minutes.
Thank you. I would like to clarify some things on the record, and happy to take any more questions on the record as well. The deputy did not know about his current conviction until after he expanded the stop. So he, you know,
I was right. It was just sort of the general yeah, I know him. He's, you know, blah, blah, blah.
First of all, I would like to say the 2014, I was trying to look at what, because the state did not establish what the investigator told him on the phone before he pulled over Mr. Ybarra. So I was trying to figure out, okay, what kind of criminal history could he have seen? So I looked at that PSI. The most recent felony conviction I saw was that 2014. So that was just kind of what I was assuming, considering he said he didn't see anything recent. Not trying to mislead the court if there happens to be anything else in his record. But I have no knowledge of that. What's that?
We would never.
Thank you. So yeah, he didn't know about that, but the kind of what he did know going into it, right, was that yeah, he has maybe been in prison recently. He has this history with drugs, but he goes and he has this conversation where he's inquiring, you know, do you have a license? Do you have a medical license? I'm getting an obvious smell. He says, if it's purchased legally, it's fine. If it's purchased illegally, it's a misdemeanor. We don't really give out tickets for that. Did you smoke earlier in the vehicle? Did you purchase it legally? Oh, your friends purchased it. Did they purchase legally? Yes, I think so. Oh, well, how do you know that? He was like, well, I guess I was just giving them a benefit of a doubt. So investigating like how his friends got the marijuana.
If Mr. Barrett said in response to the question, have you been smoking marijuana in this car on the road or highway? And he had said, absolutely. Okay, that's a misdemeanor. Would that have provided reasonable suspicion for the dog sniff?
I don't believe he had reasonable articulable suspicion of additional controlled substance crime, so no.
What if you combine, what if he had said yes, and let's say for the sake of argument, there is this torch, you know, out there.
I still don't think there's enough to investigate a controlled substance because at that point you really just have the torch. There are other cases where the torch, and this is something I wanted to talk about, the torch has been used as reasonable articulable suspicion, but in conjunction with other factors that have to do with methamphetamine use. So one I would draw the court's attention to is State v. Gomez, where the defendant had signs of current drug use, and he gave the officer permission to do the search. But he said, don't look in my glove box, and then locked the glove box. And then another officer approached and said, I have information that he has controlled substances in the glove box. So, yeah, in that circumstance, maybe a butane torch tells you that there is something going on with an illicit drug.
You know, as to the passenger's appearance, you correct me if I'm wrong, you were making an argument there's a difference. She may have looked like she had long-term drug use, but not current drug use. I'm having some trouble. I mean, doesn't long-term drug use suggest current drug use?
Oh no, I don't think so. Especially when, I mean, the effects of long-term drug use and methamphetamine is like dental decay. That doesn't go away once you stop using drugs. And you need reasonable articulable suspicion that there is drug use going on in that moment. So if he had had these crazy dilated
Whether there were
eyes,
drugs in the car.
or exactly drugs in the car, I don't. I mean, especially when you consider at that point you're when the alleged methamphetamine use characteristics are dental hygiene and sucking in eyes, and that is enough in conjunction with another legal item, a butane torch, to say there might be drugs in the car. I mean, there's a lot of reasons, mainly poverty, that people might have dental hygiene issue and sunken in eyes. I mean, I think there's a big difference between a dental like dental work and somebody who you can see bruising on their arm and you can see, you know, other signs of more recent use. People are allowed to stop being methamphetamine users. Not a lot. Sorry, I didn't mean to imply that you didn't think that, but.
But I mean, do you agree that this torch is sometimes used to you to light up meth?
Yeah, the officer did testify to that. I would argue that the characterization that it's not a lighter, I wouldn't necessarily agree with that. I think it is used in situations like camping at times. But you know, yes, it is used for methamphetamine. I'd also just like to point out, oh, no, I wouldn't.
You can, yeah, you
Come
can.
up, please.
Oh, just to sum up, the officer testified like he was not impaired. He was not worried about that impairment at all. He had no, you know, drug use, no indica of drug use, the driver himself.
All right. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Thank you to both counsel for the arguments today. The case is submitted. We'll get the opinion out with the statutory time frame. And thank you both for coming to New Ulm for the arguments today. We appreciate that. You can just leave your mics on the table. Please don't bring them with you as you leave. And with that, we are in recess.
Thank you.